So, I don't know if you guys remember. Is this on? Can you hear me? Good. During Advent, we did some really special projects. It started with India, and we rescued 165 children. Our goal was 150, so one more time, we blew our goal out of the water. We rescued 165 children that were pretty much victims of COVID, lost family members, lost parents, etc. Go ahead.
But wait, there's more.
Yes, there's all of that. So let's talk about that, Ty. Just a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned that an Afghan refugee family coming and furnishing a house. How'd we do?
Well, you shared last week. We were kind of back and forth because we felt like it was so last minute. And we ended up saying, yes, we'll get on board with this. It's the connection is there's a family some of you may be familiar with named the Schaefers. He's a former elder here and is now doing ministry in Fairport Harbor. And they got connected with an organization called Samaritan's Purse, you might be familiar with. And somehow they work with the government in the placement of refugees. Yes. And so that's kind of the backstory of what is going on. And they said they need the furnishings.
Right. And so last minute, we came to you and said, hey, let's furnish this home for this Afghan family.
And one day.
And we did it.
Really in one service, I think.
Yeah, really.
Just about. So
when you see the people coming in the second service, give them the New York cheer. You did it. They didn't. I'm sorry.
But we also received, really around Christmas time, just a challenge from our trustees to kind of say, let's yes. think kind of more. Let's think a little bolder and stuff.
And we did.
Advent. And we just wanted to kind of follow up and say, how are some of these ministries kind of going? Ivy is a new center that's opened up for women in Menor really fairly recently, and they just celebrated their 100th choice for life. So they are in triple digits.
Yeah, that's really
so
good.
It's really cool.
Friends of Recovery. Plumbing problem.
Yeah. So I got this text the other week from Dennis Anthony, who heads up Friends of Recovery.
The title of the ministry sort of explains itself. Just
yes,
so you
know. they do a recovery ministry for those struggling with addictions. And he said, good morning, brother. I wanted to share some awesome God news. It has been almost 2 months since you came to Shalom Home for Women with Children and planted the seeds for our urgent plumbing need. Those seeds have grown and produced much fruit. God didn't just bring one plumber. He delivered 10 different companies. We ended up having to form a proposal review committee to sort through the paperwork. He says, we serve an awesome God. And he says, we selected our plumber yesterday and confidently wrote them a down payment check, knowing Trinity Church of Menor helped make it all happen. Thank you and the entire Trinity family.
So awesome. So thank you.
Yeah.
And then if you remember, we did David interviewed Abraham Diali, who is a Nepalese man and has started a church on the west side of Cleveland, primarily for people from Nepal. It's called the International Fellowship Church. And we said, what do you need? And he said, we need an 18-passenger van.
15, but...
15.
He would take 18.
Yes. 15. You won't find 18. So we did some research. We even had one of our members of our church that owns a car dealer look into it. Those are very rare and very expensive.
Yeah.
So where are we now?
Well, it was a bigger project than what we were looking to take on. But we said, well, we can give some seed money to this project. And after we shared it, someone from the body wanted to do more.
Yes.
And so now this thing's got some momentum. It's got some movement. I'm going to be talking about movement. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about it and said, we feel like we need to push this further. Yeah. Like, we need to get this goal to happen. We need to see it move. And so we've been trying to pull on some purse strings of some organizations outside of Trinity and things, but we wanted to just throw it out to you guys and say, if this is something you want to get behind and if you want to help see this happen, just give a little bit more and put to van. So there's envelopes in the back. If you just want to give a designated gift, you just write van on the envelope, or you can do it online through the way we give online. It's just got like a little bar. You click on the little bar and it goes down in general and it'll say International Fellowship Church van, and you can give to that. But we really believe that we can make this happen.
Yep.
And we want to see it happen, and you guys get to be a part of it. Yes. So it's going to be exciting.
And to understand his ministry, it's a ministry to people primarily from Nepal that are coming over here, and it's basically an introduction of of who Christ is to these people. It's a wonderful ministry. And you even mentioned, Ty, it's not a van that's only used on Sunday. He's going to be using it a lot.
Yeah, he understand this is going to be used like five times a week. It's they don't have vehicles. So
okay. So thank you for your generosity. It's a joy to do ministry beyond these walls. And we wanted to give you a report.
Yes.
Sound good?
Sounds
Ty's going to bring us the book of Judges. If you need a Judges book, raise your hand and we will get you one. So I see a few hands. Now, if you've come every week and you have one and you don't bring it, then you're going to be up for church discipline next week. So I'm done. Who do you have for the Super Bowl?
I'm kind of rooting for the Ohio team, you know?
Okay. So I'm rooting for the Browns.
All right, so we're going to be in Judges chapter 5 today. So if you could turn to Judges chapter 5. When I remember watching Lord of the Rings in the theaters for the first time, and I never read the books, so kind of going in to see the movie was my first experience and entrance. And I remember after watching the first one, it was like, it was okay because I had such a hard time keeping track of all of these complex names. It's like you got Gimli and Aragorn and Dumbledore and just all of these different names I never heard of before. But by the time I went and saw the second one, it was a lot better because I was finally understanding and being able to keep track. And I kind of feel like that's what it's like today. Because in Judges chapter 5, it's actually kind of a repetition of the story that was shared last week. The story of Deborah and the story of Sisera and Jael. However, this is kind of shared in a different angle, whereas last week it was a narrative sharing of the event, really with a focus on kind of the dynamics between Deborah and Barak. And it was much more of kind of a horizontal account. This one is a song. It's poetic, and it's rehearsing the celebration of the victory. And what's unique in this one is there's much more of a understanding and a picture into the activity of God and what he was doing. So it's really unique that it wasn't shared so much in the first account of the battle, but we'll see it a little bit more here. And so really what I want you guys to think through and kind of have in the back of your mind as we walk through this song is I think it goes through the story in three parts. There is the God who moves and the God who acts. And then there are the people who come alongside, the people who participate and get on board with God's movement. And then there are the people who stand against God. So it's all about movement. And then the question is, where are you? So let's look at this passage. First thing we see in Judges chapter 5, verse 4. Let me read it aloud. It says, Lord, when you went out from Seir, and yes, the clouds dropped water. The mountains quaked before the Lord, even Sinai before the Lord, the God of Israel. What's going on there? The first time I read that, I thought, is this kind of like apocalyptic language? A lot of times in scripture, you will see language of great cataclysmic kind of events happening. And it's kind of a way of just describing God's activity, though it might not have been that big. You know, you think about the moon turning to blood and all of these different kind of things you might see through scripture. But as I read through and studied, I realized, no, this is literal. This is what they're talking about, that in that event, the heavens opened up and rain came down. Do you remember last week, Pastor Paul was talking about how this battle occurred in a dry valley during dry season? And they said all of a sudden, Israelites had the victory. But it doesn't talk about God's activity last week, but it talks about it here. If you jump ahead to verse 20, in chapter 5, it says, from heaven the stars fought. From their course they fought against Sisera. The torrent Kishon swept them away. The ancient terror, the torrent Kishon marched on my soul with might. And so what seems like happened in this account is Deborah is saying to Barak, hey, you need to go do this. All right, so they go out to battle and they're getting ready to fight against Sisera in his 900 chariots that are running through on this nice dry land. And as the people of Israel go against the fight, all of a sudden the heavens open up and it just pours rain. And you know what it's like in a dry area in a valley when all the rain is gushing down. All of a sudden, all of this dry area got saturated and got flooded and into a mucky, muddy mess. So how do you think that would affect the 900 chariots that are going through? If you think about the account from last week, it says that Sisera, when he saw how things were going, he got off his chariot and fled on. If you're trying to get away, if it's stuck, if it won't move. And so what we see in Judges 5 is that, yeah, their victory was there, but now we understand it wasn't just God saying, I'm for you. It was God saying, and I'm going to partner with you. It was very clear to the people of Israel who went out to battle, whoa, God is active. God moved on our behalf. The heavens opened up. The rain poured, and it gave us the victory. God is the one who initiates, and God is the one who moves. And we're just called to participate. We're called to move along with him. I love what it says in verse 4, how it says, it shows this picture of God marching in the battle. And when God marches, we want to go alongside of it. And I think the question to ask is, how do we know when God's on the move? How do we know when God is marching? And I think there's a lot of things we could kind of think through. It's not like there's one monolithic answer to that question. However, when we go to the text here, I think we see an example, at least for something for us that we should apply and consider in our lives if we want to know and be observant for where God might be marching, is to ask, where are we praying? Because what we see is that the people of Israel called out to the Lord in their oppression. And he responded. So the question for us is, if we want to see where God is on the march, we need to ask, what are we praying for? And where and what we're praying for, may we have the eyes to be looking for God moving and God on the march. And it's a reminder to us, I think, often, that when we consider our prayer life and the things that we are asking for, what if we made sure to include in our time of prayer something only God could do? Something we would know God is on the move if he answers this prayer, because there's not really a better explanation for what's going on. So I think part of the application of today is that thought. What are you praying for? And what can you be praying for where you would only know it was happening because God's on the move? And the second part I would encourage you to do with that is, we really encourage people to get smaller than in this room. Try to connect with people in a smaller group, whether it's a discipleship group or a sermon-based group. Connect in a smaller group of people. And what I would encourage you to do is, in that fellowship and in that group, share something you're praying for, where you're looking for God to move, and he's the only explanation for it. Think, if you do that and you see God's movement in that prayer with other believers, what kind of encouragement would that be to everyone in the group? What kind of amazement? What kind of awe? It'd be like the awe the people of Israel saw on that day. So the first thing we see is God is on the move. I think the second thing we see are the people who get on board. And there's two groups of people. There's what I call the early adopters and then the later ones. And it's interesting, in verse 5, it introduces us to two. It says, in the days of Shamgar, son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were abandoned, and travelers kept to the byway. So it mentions two kind of obscure people, Shamgar and Jael, and they kind of are bookends to the story. Shamgar is at the very end of chapter 3, right before we enter into this account of Barak and Deborah. And Jael is what ends the story. And these two people, I believe, are paired together because they're so unique. And they share quite a few things in common. If we look back into the end of chapter 3, we see that this individual Shamgar killed a bunch of Philistines with an ox goad. Now, what an ox goad is it's basically a pole with a little prodder at the end of it to goad, to push the oxes along. And it usually has like a little hook at the end of it too, to kind of clean out hooves and things like that. It's not a conventional warfare weapon. And he took down all of these Philistines just with that. And the only other thing we know about him is that he was not an Israelite. And then we come to Jael. Well, what did we see about Jael, and what did we learn about Jael last week? She too, not an Israelite, nor is she a conventional warrior, just as Shamgar is not. Nor did she use a conventional war weapon. And the reason the story starts off with this, are you participating, is to remind the people of Israel, where are you? Are you participating or not? And if not, what's your excuse? Because here's what we see. We see God using non-warriors, non-Israelites, with non-weapons to get his victory. So what's your reason for not jumping on? And then we see the next early adopter, which is Deborah in verse 7. It says, the villagers ceased in Israel. They ceased to be until I arose. I, Deborah, arose as a mother in Israel. And so Deborah, we learned a lot about last week. She is this early adopter. She took on this charge. She led the way. And what this reminds me of is a term and an idea that's often found in marketing, which is called the diffusion of innovation theory. And I've got a little bar graph. And what you see is, oftentimes when a new product is out, they recognize it typically follows this kind of pattern. And what you have is the beginning is the innovators, the ones who create the momentum. It's the Elon Musks and the Tesla. And then you have this small minority called early adopters. They're the ones who take the risk. They buy the product and they're ready to get on board right away. They're the ones who receive all the questions. Well, what about the battery life? What about this self-driving technology? What about, what about, what about? And they say, I'm in. I believe this is the future, and I'm getting on board, and I'm going for it. And then there is that big hump in the middle. And those are the people who say, I'm going to wait it out. I'm going to see how this stuff goes. And there's reasons for it, right? Maybe you've been burned before. Maybe you're a part of those people who bought a Microsoft Zune, and it's just made you a little weary of new technology. I can remember when I was in junior high, we were in music class, and they wheeled out this cart, and it had a laser disc player, not a DVD. I don't know if you remember. There used to be gigantic, like record-size laser discs, hugely expensive. The early innovators for that got burned. They took the risk and they lost, right? So there's reasons to be fearful always. But the early innovators believe in what's happening and they get on board. And so what we see in this passage is we see these early innovators, and they're the ones who are celebrated. Barak is the one who's supposed to be jumping on board. He has all the reason in the world to be an early innovator and to jump on. And he doesn't. And you know what? He's not even hardly mentioned in this passage. Yeah, he did a great job. He led the people. He got the victory. But he's not remembered for it. He doesn't get any of the accolades. He doesn't get any of the recognition, because he stepped back when he should have been moving forward. And then the next group we see is a list of all of the tribes of Israel and kind of where they stand and what they did. So if you have your Judges book, turn towards the back. And when you see the map, I just want to lay things out so you see a little bit about what is kind of going on here. So if you look at your map, and up towards the north, you see the little blue area that says the Sea of Galilee. Okay, above that you see the word Naphtali. All right, right about where that I, the letter I is in Naphtali, you can put a little star or something. That's where Hazor is. That's where Jabin was reigning. Now, if you go a little bit up, if you see that box that says Shamgar, right about at the bottom corner of where that box is, you can put a mark. That's about where Kadesh is. That's where Barak was living. Now, if you look further south, you can see the box that says Deborah right under the purple area of Ephraim. You see it marks where Deborah is. Deborah is kind of right on the border between Ephraim in that little orange area, which is the tribe of Benjamin. Deborah's all the way down there. Now, when we go through the account, if you look in verse 14, let me read this. It talks about the tribes that jump in and the tribes that hold back. It says, from Ephraim, their route, they marched down into the valley, following you, Benjamin, with your kinsmen. From Machir marched down the commanders, and from Zebulun, those who bear the lieutenant's staff. The princes of Issachar came with Deborah, and Issachar faithful to Barak. If you see Naphtali, see Zebulun, you can put a mark. They were in. Issachar, they were in. West Manasseh, that Machir is referring to part of the tribe of Manasseh. So they were in. And then go down to purple, Ephraim, they were in. You go down to orange, Benjamin, they were in. So you can mark however you want. All of those were the tribes that jumped in. They were part of that early hump. Deborah was the early innovator, but these people jumped right on. Then if we read on, it says in verse 15, towards the end, it says, among the clans of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. Why did you sit still among the sheepfolds to hear the whistling for the flocks? Among the clans of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. Gilead stayed beyond the Jordan, and Dan, why did you stay with the ships? Asher sat still at the coast of the sea, staying by the landings. And so if you look back on your map, you see that blue area that says Gad, that's where Gilead is. So Gad stayed on the sidelines. Reuben stayed on the sidelines. On the other side, Dan stayed on the sidelines. And then up in the north in the green, Asher stayed on the sidelines. Now, if you mark those and you look at the map now and you see who jumped in and who stayed out, and you see where Sisera's kind of active at, what do you see? My guess is what you'll begin to notice is that those who were closest to the point of pain were those who were willing, were the ones most likely to say, not my problem. I'm not taking the chance. I think a couple of things to notice, though, as we look at this. First, look at Ephraim and Benjamin all the way down there, and yet they jumped in. Why? I think the reason they jumped in, look where Deborah is. She's right on the border of both of them. And I think this is an important lesson of leadership. They jumped in because they believed in her. They knew where she goes, God is going. She hears God, and if this is what we're supposed to do, we're going for it. Even if it might not involve our direct skin, but we know those are our people up there, and when they hurt, we hurt. And so we're going. The second thing I think that we observe is look at passage in verse 18. You see this account of all of these places that are jumping in, and then it lists the tribes that aren't. And then it goes back to Zebulun and Naphtali. And then later on in verses 23, it begins to go to those who are against them. It begins cursing. And so there's this kind of parenthesis in between where they revisit Zebulun and Naphtali and their victory. And so you've got the tribes that jump in, and then at the bottom, cursed for Sisera who goes against. And then there's this middle point, and it talks about Zebulun, and it talks about Naphtali and their heroics in battle. And right next to it, it talks about the heavens, and it talks about the torrent. And what it reminds us of in the beginning of when they marched, heavens open up. They got to see the activity of God. And that is their reward. Why would you stay at the shore, Dan? Why would you just ponder and twiddle your thumbs, Zebulun, when you can see the torrent, when you can see the activity of God? And that's the challenge for us this morning too. There's a lot of opportunities for us to just sit back and ponder. And the ocean is a very relaxing place to just hang out. But that's not what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be sensitive to God's movement and be able to get on board and come alongside of it. And that's the only way we will see the torrent. I think oftentimes in our spiritual lives, we will hit times of dryness and we will hit times of staleness. And the reason is because we're enjoying the sea too much. We've gotten very comfortable. We're removed from the pain of Sisera, and we're okay just hanging on the sidelines. And then we wonder, why don't I see the activity of God more in my life? Because we're not going where he's moving. And so it's an important invitation to us to remember there's God's activity, and there's those who join him, and there's those who are against him. Where are you? And then it moves on to the curses. In verse 23, it says, "Curse Meraz," says the angel of the Lord, "curse its inhabitants thoroughly because they did not come to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the mighty." Did God need Meraz? No, but they were supposed to go. Is it a question of whether or not God needs you? No, it's a question of what he's supposed to do. And we don't know anything about Meraz. Really hard figuring out why this place was singled out. But I believe for some reason, they had a higher level of expectation and responsibility that they didn't follow through with. And for that, they are singled out. Because the very next thing we go into is the story of Sisera, the bad guy. So if you are part of the tribes of Israel, you don't want to be mentioned right before him. But that's where they're at. And now we move into this account of the story of Sisera and Jael, the one who moved against God. And it says, "Most blessed of women be Jael, the wife of Hera the Kenite, of twin dwelling women, most blessed." And what others? If you remember early on in this song, Deborah says, "The mother of Israel." Paul talked about it last week. We see it in this account well. Jael is kind of acting in this matronly role. She covers up Jael with a blankie. She gives him warm milk. She puts him down to bed. It's a picture of mothers. And then we are introduced to the other mom. It's a competing story of moms. We're introduced to the mother of Sisera. All of a sudden, she is in the picture. If you look further down in verse 29, I believe, verse 28, it says, out of the window she peered, the mother of Sisera wailed through the lattice. Why is his chariot so long in coming? Why tarry the hoofbeats of his chariots? And so now the song introduces the contrasting mother who's saying, where is my son coming from all of his pillaging? Why is it taking him so long to get back to battle, back from battle? And it's kind of this mocking dynamic. And what it reminds us of is, here's what I think it tells us. I think when we go through something like the book of Judges, Pastor Paul has mentioned it before, one of the questions we ask is, what's with all the violence? What is with all of the punishment and judgment and death? And I just want to put before you that I think that question comes from a place of privilege. We're in a place where we don't experience the boot of oppression, the weight of violence. And so when we read a passage like this, we think, how come? But when people who are in those positions see this or experience this, their question is not how come, their question is how long? When are you going to act, God? When are you going to move and deliver us from this evil? Because the only one who can do it is God. And so let me paint a picture of what the evil is that was going on, because we see it, I think, throughout this passage. When we go back to verse six, it says, in the days of Shamgar and the day of Jael, it says the highways were abandoned. There was no safety in traveling on the highways. Later on in that passage, it talks about 40,000 Israelites, none of them with a weapon. They were so oppressed that the leaders made sure they had no weapons in order to create any kind of uprising against them. That's why Shamgar had an ox goad. That's all they were able to have. So the weight of oppression was heavy. The danger was everywhere. And then if you look at the princess's response, this is the response that the princesses give to Sisera's mother about why it's taking him so long to get back from battle. Herself. Have they not found in the material for Sisera? Spoil of dyed materials embroidered. So what they're saying in that passage is, I bet the reason it's taking so long for them to get back from battle is because of all the raping and pillaging they're doing. Two women for every man. It's taking so long for them to get back because they're taking all of these women and they don't even give them the dignity of calling them women. They identify them as wombs, just their sexual objects. Two wombs for every man. That's why it's taking so long. Now, for those who are fathers of daughters, does it sound so unjust anymore? And what we see in this passage is poetic justice, because Sisera got two wombs, Deborah and Jael. And God used those two wombs to exact justice. The reason there's so much violence in a book like this is because men like Sisera exist. And so it's important to remember and to recognize that in the time of Judges, as people act with evil, God responded to deliver and to rescue. And so he uses these two women to undo the plots and the schemes of Sisera. Now, what are the 3 points? What are the 3 takeaways we want to take away with every week? First, the theological point. Theological point, God is the initiator. We are the participants. It's God who moves. It's God who initiates. Second, timeless. There is no, we are called to participate. And for the tribes that are, the point of the story was, as they call out every one of those tribes, and for the tribes that are sitting on the sidelines, it's a shame on you. And the question we need to ask is, which tribe are we a part of? If you've been a part of Trinity for as long as you can remember, and you've even gone through the process of membership, but you can't think of a place you're serving, you're part of the tribe of Asher. You're sitting on the sidelines. You're not supposed to. It's time to move and be a part of what God is doing. Third thing we see, the Christ focus. What we see in this passage is that Jesus is the final victor. There was a time where there was another unsuspecting victory that came along, and it was accomplished as well through a hammer and a spike. But this time, the victor's hand wasn't holding the hammer, it was holding the spike. God always moves in unsuspecting activity. And the call for us to participate and get along with what he's doing is a call in which we're not going to see what we think we might see. For us, it might look like a very methodical kind of slow process of getting connected with people, of learning about their lives, of serving along with them, of serving in kids' ministry, of greeting people at the door. And it's a process of moving in that direction where we begin to see God's activity and begin to see what he's doing. He always works through the unsuspecting. We love to just see the torrent. But in order to see that, we first got to take the step to get on board. You join me in prayer? Lord, we thank you for the reminder that you are on the move, that we don't have to push, that you are the one who initiates. And we recognize that you call us to get on board. So Lord, I pray that we will see you move in our lives and in our time. May we see the torrent. In your name we pray. Amen.